You think I'll get one quarter of what I ask for in anything less than 2 years? You're crazy. It won't happen. He shrugged and said more gently, Don't get me wrong, Harry. I would like to help you if I could. I would particularly like to help you for the sake of your granddaughter. Looking at her makes me feel as though I should give you all the credit you would like. But it can't be done. Selden said, Aegis, if I don't get funding, psychohistory will go down the drain after nearly 40 years. It's come to nothing in nearly 40 years, so why worry? Aegis, said Selden, there's nothing more I can do now. The assaults on me were precisely because I'm a psychohistorian. People consider me a predictor of destruction. The Emperor nodded. You're bad luck, Raven Selden. I told you this earlier. Selden stood up wretchedly. I'm through then. Wanda stood too next to Selden, the top of her head reaching her grandfather's shoulder. She gazed fixedly at the Emperor. As Harry turned to go, the Emperor said, Wait. Wait, there's a little verse I once memorized. Ill fares the land, to hastening ills a prey, where wealth accumulates and men decay. What does it mean? Asked a dispirited Selden. It means that the Empire is steadily deteriorating and falling apart, but that doesn't keep some individuals from growing rich. Why not turn to some of our wealthy entrepreneurs? They don't have legislators, and can, if they wish, simply sign a credit voucher. Selden stared. I'll try that. Chapter 22 Mr. Bindris, said Harry Selden, reaching out his hand to shake the others, I am so glad to be able to see you. It was good of you to agree to see me. Why not? Said Tarrant Bindris jovially. I know you well, or rather, I know of you well. That's pleasant. I take it you've heard of psychohistory, then. Oh, yes. What intelligent person hasn't? Not that I understand anything about it, of course. And who is this young lady you have with you? My granddaughter Wanda. A very pretty young woman. He beamed. Somehow I feel I'd be putty in her hands. Wanda said, I think you exaggerate, sir. No, really. Now please sit down and tell me what it is I can do for you. He gestured expansively with his arm, indicating that they be seated on 2 overstuffed, richly brocaded chairs in front of the desk at which he sat. The chairs, like the ornate desk, the imposing carved doors which had slid back noiselessly at their arrival signal, and the gleaming obsidian floor of Bindris's vast office were of the finest quality. And although his surroundings were impressive and imposing, Bindris himself was not. The slight, cordial man would not be taken at first glance for one of Trantor's leading financial power brokers. We're here, sir, at the Emperor's suggestion. The Emperor? Yes. He could not help us, but he thought a man like you might be able to do so. The question, of course, is credits. Mindris's face fell. Credits? He said. I don't understand. Well, said Selden, for nearly 40 years, psychohistory has been supported by the government. However, times change, and the Empire is no longer what it was. Yes, I know that. The emperor lacks the credits to support us. Or even if he did have the credits, he couldn't get the request for funding past the legislature. He recommends, therefore, that I see business people who in the first place still have credits, and in the second place can simply write out a credit voucher. There was a longish pause, and Bindris finally said, "The emperor, I'm afraid, knows nothing about business. How many credits do you want?" "Mr. Bindris, we're talking about an enormous task. I'm going to need several million." "Several million?" "Yes, sir." Bindris frowned. "Are we talking about a loan here? When do you expect to be able to pay it back?" "Well, Mr. Bindris, I can't honestly say I ever expect to be able to pay it back. I'm looking for a gift." "Even if I wanted to give you the credits, and let me tell you, for some strange reason I very much want to do so, I couldn't. The emperor may have his legislature, but I have my board members. I can't make a gift of that sort without the board's permission, and they'll never grant it." "Why not? Your firm is enormously wealthy. A few million would mean nothing to you." "That sounds good," said Bindris. "But I am afraid that the firm is in a state of decline right now. Not sufficiently to bring us into serious trouble, but enough to make us unhappy. If the empire is in a state of decay, different individual parts of it are decaying too. We are in no position to hand out a few million. I'm truly sorry." Selden sat there silently, and Bindris seemed unhappy. He shook his head at last and said, "Look, Professor Selden, I would really like to help you out, particularly for the sake of the young lady you have with you. It just can't be done. However, we're not the only firm in Trantor. Try others, Professor. You may have better luck elsewhere." "Well," said Selden, raising himself to his feet with an effort, "we shall try." Chapter 23. Wanda's eyes were filled with tears, but the emotion they represented was not sorrow, but fury. "Grandpa," she said, "I don't understand it. I simply don't understand it. We've been to 4 different firms. Each one was ruder and nastier to us than the one before. The 4th one just kicked us out. And since then, no one will let us in."
"It's no mystery, Wanda," said Selden gently. "When we saw Bindris, he didn't know what we were there for, and he was perfectly friendly until I asked for a gift of a few million credits. Then he was a great deal less friendly. I imagine the word went out as to what we wanted, and each additional time there was less friendliness, until now, when people won't receive us at all. Why should they? They're not going to give us the credits we need, so why waste time with us?" Wanda's anger turned on herself. "And what did I do? I just sat there. Nothing."
"I wouldn't say that," said Selden. "Bindris was affected by you. It seems to me that he really wanted to give me the credits, largely because of you. You were pushing him and accomplishing something."
"Not nearly enough. Besides, all he cared about was that I was pretty."
"Not pretty," muttered Selden. "Beautiful. Very beautiful."
"So what do we do now, Grandpa?" asked Wanda. "After all these years, psychohistory will collapse."
"I suppose that," said Selden,
In a way, it's something that can't be helped. I've been predicting the breakdown of the Empire for nearly 40 years, and now that it's come, psychohistory breaks down with it.
But psychohistory will save the Empire, at least partly.
I know it will, but I can't force it to.
Are you just going to let it collapse?
Selden shook his head. I'll try to keep it from doing so, but I must admit that I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Wanda said, I'm going to practice. There must be some way I can strengthen my push, make it easier for me to force people to do what I want them to do.
I wish you could manage.
What are you going to do, Grandpa?
Well, nothing much. 2 days ago, when I was on my way to see the chief librarian, I encountered 3 men in the library who were arguing about psychohistory. For some reason, one of them impressed me very much. I urged him to come see me, and he agreed. The appointment is for this afternoon at my office.
Are you going to have him work for you?
I would like to, if I have enough credits to pay him with. But it can't hurt to talk with him. After all, what can I lose?
Chapter 24. The young man arrived at precisely 4 TST, Trantorian Standard Time, and Selden smiled. He loved punctual people. He placed his hands on his desk and made ready to heave to his feet. But the young man said, Please, Professor, I know you have a bad leg. You needn't stand up.
Selden said, Thank you, young man. However, that does not mean that you cannot sit down. Please do. The young man removed his jacket and sat down.
Selden said, You must forgive me. When we met and set up this appointment, I neglected to learn your name, which is...
Stettin Palver, said the young man.
Ah, Palver. Palver. The name sounds familiar.
It should, Professor. My grandfather boasted frequently of having known you.
Your grandfather?
Of course, Joramus Palver. He was 2 years younger than I was, as I recall. I tried to get him to join me in psychohistory, but he refused. He said there was no chance of his ever learning enough mathematics to make it possible.
Too bad. How is Joramus, by the way?
Palver said solemnly, I'm afraid that Joramus has gone the way of old men generally. He's dead.
Selden winced. 2 years younger than he himself was, and dead. An old friend, and they had lost touch to such a degree that when death came, it did so unknowingly.
Selden sat there for a while and finally muttered, I'm sorry. The young man shrugged.
He had a good life.
And you, young man, where did you have your schooling?
Langano University.
Selden frowned.
Langano? Stop me if I'm wrong, but that's not on Trantor, is it?
No, I wanted to try a different world. The universities on Trantor, as you undoubtedly know very well, are all overcrowded. I wanted to find a place where I could study in peace.
And what did you study?
Nothing much. History. Not the sort of thing that would lead one to a good job.
Another wince, even worse than the first. Doris Van Eboli had been a historian.
Selden said, But you're back here on Trantor. Why is that?
Credits? Jobs?
As an historian?
Palver laughed. Not a chance. I run a device that pulls and hauls.
not exactly a professional occupation.
Selden looked at Palver with a twinge of envy. The contours of Palver's arms and chest were highlighted by the thin fabric of his shirt. He was well-muscled. Selden had never himself been quite that muscular. Selden said, "I presume that when you were at the university you were on the boxing team."
"Who, me? Never. I'm a twister."
"A twister?" Selden's spirits jumped. "Are you from Helicon?"
Palver said with a certain contempt, "You don't have to come from Helicon to be a good twister."
"No," thought Selden, "but that's where the best ones come from." However, he said nothing. He did say, though, "Well, your grandfather would not join me. How about you?"
"Psychohistory?"
"I heard you talking to the others when I first encountered you, and it seemed to me that you were talking quite intelligently about psychohistory. Would you like to join me then?"
"As I said, Professor, I have a job."
"Pushing and hauling. Come, come."
"It pays well."
"Credits aren't everything."
"They're quite a bit. Now you, on the other hand, can't pay me much. I'm quite certain that you're short of credits."
"Why do you say that?"
"I'm guessing, in a way, I suppose. But am I wrong?"
Selden's lips pressed together hard. Then he said, "No, you're not wrong, and I can't pay you much. I'm sorry. I suppose that ends our little interview."
"Wait, wait, wait."
Palver held up his hands. "Not quite so fast, please. We're still talking about psychohistory. If I work for you, I will be taught psychohistory, right?"
"Of course."
"In that case, credits aren't everything after all. I'll make you a deal. You teach me all the psychohistory you can, and you pay me whatever you can, and I'll get by somehow. How about it?"
"Wonderful," said Selden joyously. "That sounds great. Now, one more thing."
"Oh?"
"Yes. I've been attacked twice in recent weeks. The first time, my son came to my defense, but he has since gone to Santani. The second time, I made use of my lead-filled walking stick. It worked, but I was dragged before a magistrate and accused of assault and battery."
"Why the attacks?"
interjected Palver.
"I am not popular. I have been preaching the fall of the Empire for so long that, now that it is coming, I'm blamed for it."
"I see. Now then, what does all that have to do with the one more thing you mentioned?"
"I want you to be my bodyguard. You're young, you're strong, and most of all, you're a twister. You're exactly what I need."
"I suppose it can be managed," Palver said with a smile.
Chapter 25. "See there, Stettin," Selden said as the two were taking an early evening stroll in one of Trantor's residential sectors near Streeling. The older man pointed to debris, assorted refuse jettisoned from passing ground cars or dropped by careless pedestrians, strewn along the walkway.
"In the old days," Selden continued, "you would never see litter like this. The security officers were vigilant, and municipal maintenance crews provided round-the-clock upkeep of all public areas. But most important, no one would even think of dumping his trash in such a manner. Trantor was our home. We took pride in it. Now,"
Selden shook his head sadly, resignedly, and sighed,
"it's..." He broke off abruptly.
You there, young man! Selden shouted at an ill-kempt fellow who had moments before passed them, going in the opposite direction. He was munching a treat just popped into his mouth. The wrapper had been tossed to the ground without so much as a downward glance. Pick that up and dispose of it properly, Selden admonished as the young man eyed him sullenly. Pick it up yourself, the boy snarled. And then he turned and walked away. It's another sign of society's breakdown, as predicted by your psychohistory, Professor Selden, Palver said. Yes, Stetton. All around us, the Empire is falling apart, piece by piece. In fact, it's already smashed. There's no turning back now. Apathy, decay, and greed have all played their parts in destroying the once glorious empire. And what will take its place? Why... Here Selden broke off at the sight of Palver's face. The younger man seemed to be listening intently, but not to Selden's voice. His head was cocked to one side, and his face had a far-off look. It was as if Palver were straining to hear some sound inaudible to everyone but himself. Suddenly, he snapped back to the here and now. With an urgent glance around them, Palver took hold of Selden's arm. Harry, quick, we must get away. They're coming. And then the still evening was broken by the harsh sound of rapidly approaching footsteps. Selden and Palver spun around, but it was too late. A band of attackers was upon them. This time, however, Harry Selden was prepared. He immediately swung his cane in a wide arc around Palver and himself. At this, the three attackers, two boys and a girl, all teenage ruffians, laughed. "So you're not going to make it easy, are you, old man?" snorted the boy who appeared to be the group's ringleader. "Why, me and my buddies will take you out in 2 seconds flat. We'll..." All of a sudden, the ringleader was down, the victim of a perfectly placed twist kick to his abdomen. The two ruffians who were still standing quickly dropped to a crouch in preparation for attack. But Palver was quicker. They, too, were felled almost before they knew what hit them. And then it was over, almost as soon as it started. Selden stood off to the side, leaning heavily on his cane, shaking at the thought of his narrow escape. Palver, panting slightly from exertion, surveyed the scene. The three attackers were out cold on the deserted walkway under the darkening dome. "Come on, let's get out of here quickly," Palver urged again. Only this time it was not the attackers they would be fleeing. "Stetton, we can't leave," protested Selden. He gestured toward the unconscious would-be muggers. "They're really nothing more than children. They may be dying. How can we just walk away? It's inhumane. That's what it is, and humanity is exactly what I've been working all these years to protect." Selden struck the ground with his cane for emphasis, and his eyes gleamed with conviction. "Nonsense," retorted Palver. "What's inhumane is the way muggers like that prey on innocent citizens like you. Do you think they'd have given you a second thought? They'd just as soon stick a knife in your gut to steal your last credit, and then kick you as they ran. They'll come to soon enough and slink away to lick their wounds. Or someone will find them and call the central office. But Harry, you must think. After what happened last time, you stand to lose everything if you're linked to another beating. Please, Harry, we must run." With this, Palver grabbed Selden's arm, and Selden, after a last backward glance, allowed himself to be led away. As the footsteps of the rapidly departing Selden and Palver diminished in the distance, another figure emerged from his hiding place behind some trees. Chuckling to himself, the sullen-eyed youth muttered, "You're a fine one to tell me what's right and what's wrong, Professor." With that, he spun on his heel and headed off to summon the security officers. Chapter 26. "Order? I will have order," bellowed Judge Tehan Popkins Lee. The public hearing of Professor Raven Selden and his young associate, Stetton Palver, had generated a hue and cry among the populace of Trantor. Here was the man who had predicted the fall of the Empire, the decay of civilization, who exhorted others to hearken back to the golden age of civility and order. Here was he, who, according to an eyewitness, had ordered the brutal beating of 3 young Trantorians for no apparent provocation. Ah, yes, it promised to be a spectacular hearing, one which would lead, no doubt, to an even more spectacular trial. The judge pressed a contact set into a recessed panel on her bench, and a sonorous gong resounded through the packed courtroom. "I will have order," she repeated to the now hushed throng. "If need be, the courtroom will be cleared. That is a warning. It will not be repeated." The judge cut an imposing figure in her scarlet robe. Originally from the outer world of Lystina, Lee's complexion had a slight bluish cast, which turned darker when she became exercised, practically purple when she was really angry. It was rumored that for all her years on the bench, in spite of her reputation as a top judicial mind, notwithstanding her position as one of the most revered interpreters of imperial law, Lee was ever so slightly vain about the colorful appearance she gave, the way in which the bright red robes set off her soft turquoise skin. Nevertheless, Lee had a reputation for coming down hard on those who brooked imperial law. She was one of the few judges left who upheld the civil code without wavering. "I have heard of you, Professor Selden, and your theories about our imminent destruction. And I have spoken with the magistrate who recently heard another case in which you were involved, one in which you struck a man with your lead-filled cane. In that instance, too, you claimed to be the victim of assault. Your reasoning stemmed, I believe, from a previous unreported incident in which you and your son allegedly were assaulted by 8 hoodlums. You were able to convince my esteemed colleague, Professor Selden, of your plea of self-defense, even though an eyewitness testified otherwise. This time, Professor, you will have to be much more convincing." The 3 hoodlums who were bringing charges against Selden and Palver snickered in their seats at the plaintiff's table. They presented a much different appearance today than they had the evening of the attack. The young men were sporting clean, loose-fitting unisuits. The young lady was wearing a crisply pleated tunic. All in all, if one didn't look, or listen, too closely, the 3 presented a reassuring picture of Trantorian youth. Selden's lawyer, Siv Novker, who was representing Palver as well, approached the bench. "Your Honor, my client is an upstanding member of the Trantorian community. He is a former First Minister of stellar repute. He is a personal acquaintance of our Emperor Aegis XIV. What possible benefit could Professor Selden derive from attacking innocent young people? He is one of the most vocal proponents of stimulating the intellectual creativity of Trantorian youth. His psychohistory project employs numerous student volunteers. He is a beloved member of the Streening University faculty. Further, Here Novker paused, sweeping his gaze around the packed courtroom, as if to say, "Wait till you hear this. You'll be ashamed that you ever, for a second, doubted the veracity of my client's claims." Professor Selden is one of the very few private individuals officially allied with the prestigious Galactic Library. He has been granted unlimited use of library facilities for work on what he calls the Encyclopedia Galactica, a veritable peon to Imperial civilization. I ask you, how can this man even be questioned in such a matter? With a flourish of his arm, Novker gestured toward Selden, who was sitting at the defendant's table with Stetton Palver, looking decidedly uncomfortable. Harry's cheeks were flushed from the unaccustomed praise. After all, lately his name was the subject of derisive snickers rather than flowery plaudits, and his hand shook slightly on the carved handle of his trusty cane. Judge Lee gazed down at Selden, clearly unimpressed. "What benefit indeed, Counselor? I have been asking myself that very question. I've lain awake these past nights, racking my brains for a plausible reason. Why would a man of Professor Selden's stature commit unprovoked assault and battery, when he himself is one of our most outspoken critics of the so-called breakdown of civil order? And then it dawned on me. Perhaps in his frustration at not being believed, Professor Selden feels he must prove to the worlds that his predictions of doom and gloom really are coming to pass. Perhaps in his frustration at not being believed, Professor Selden feels he must prove to the worlds that his predictions of doom and gloom really are coming to pass. After all, here is a man who has spent his entire career foretelling the fall of the Empire, and all he can really point to are a few burned-out bulbs in the dome, an occasional glitch in public transport, a budget cut here or there. Nothing very dramatic. But an attack, or two or three, now that would be something." Lee sat back and folded her hands in front of her, a satisfied expression on her face. Selden stood, leaning heavily on the table for support. With great effort, he approached the bench, waving off his lawyer, walking headlong into the steely gaze of the judge. "Your Honor, please permit me to say a few words in my defense." "Of course, Professor Selden. After all, this is not a trial, only a hearing to air all allegations, facts, and theories pertinent to the case before deciding whether or not to go ahead with the trial. I have merely expressed a theory. I am most interested to hear what you have to say." Selden cleared his throat before beginning. "I have devoted my life to the Empire. I have faithfully served the Emperors. My science of psychohistory, rather than being a harbinger of destruction, is intended to be used as an agent for rejuvenation. With it, we can be prepared for whatever course civilization takes. If, as I believe, the Empire continues to break down, psychohistory will help us put into place building blocks for a new and better civilization, founded on all that is good from the old. I love our worlds, our peoples, our empire. What would it behoove me to contribute to the lawlessness that saps its strength daily? I can say no more. You must believe me. I, a man of intellect, of equations, of science, I am speaking from my heart." Selden turned and made his way slowly back to his chair beside Palver. Before sitting, his eyes sought Wanda, sitting in the spectators' gallery. She smiled wanly and winked at him. "From the heart or not, Professor Selden, this decision will require much thought on my part. We have heard from your accusers,
We have heard from you and Mr. Palver. There is one more party whose testimony I need. I'd like to hear from Rial Navas, who has come forward as an eyewitness to this incident. As Navas approached the bench, Selden and Palver looked at each other in alarm. It was the boy whom Harry had admonished just before the attack. Lee was asking the youth a question. Would you describe, Mr. Navas, exactly what you witnessed on the night in question? Well, started Navas, fixing Selden with his sullen stare. I was walking along, minding my own business, when I saw those two. He turned and pointed at Selden and Palver, on the other side of the walkway, coming toward me. And then I saw those three kids. Another point of the finger, this time toward the three sitting at the plaintiff's table. The two older guys were walking behind the kids. They didn't see me, though, on account of I was on the other side of the walkway, and besides, they were concentrating on their victims. Then, wham, just like that, that old guy swings at him with his stick. Then the younger guy jumps him and kicks him, and before you know it, they're all down on the ground. Then the old guy and his pal, they just took off, just like that. I couldn't believe it. That's a lie, Selden exploded. Young man, you're playing with our lives here. Navas only stared back at Selden impassively. Judge, Selden implored, can't you see that he is lying? I remember this fellow. I scolded him for littering just minutes before we were attacked. I pointed it out to Stettin as another instance of the breakdown of our society, the apathy of the citizenry, the... Enough, Professor Selden, commanded the judge. Another outburst like that, and I will have you ejected from this courtroom. Now, Mr. Navas, she said, turning back to the witness, what did you do throughout the sequence of events you just described? I hid behind some trees. I hid. I was afraid they'd come after me if they saw me, so I hid. And when they were gone, well, I ran and called the security officers. Navas had started to sweat, and he inserted a finger into the constricting collar of his unisuit. He fidgeted, shifting his weight from one foot to the other as he stood on the raised speaker's platform. He was uncomfortably aware of the crowd's eyes upon him. He tried to avoid looking into the audience, but each time he did, he found himself drawn to the steady gaze of a pretty blonde girl sitting in the first row. It was as if she was asking him a question, pressing him for an answer, willing him to speak. Mr. Navas, what do you have to say about Professor Selden's allegation that he and Mr. Palver did see you prior to the attack, that the professor actually exchanged words with you?
Well, no, you see, it was just like I said. I was walking along.
And now Navas looked over at Selden's table. Selden looked at the young man sadly, as if he realized all was lost. But Selden's companion, Stettin Palver, turned a fierce gaze on Navas, and Navas jumped, startled, at the words he heard. Tell the truth. It was as if Palver had spoken, but Palver's lips hadn't moved. And then, confused, Navas snapped his head in the direction of the blonde girl. He thought he heard her speak. Tell the truth. But her lips were still as well. Mr. Navas! Mr. Navas! The judge's voice broke in on the youth's jumbled thoughts. Mr. Navas, if Professor Selden and Mr. Palver were walking toward you, behind the three plaintiffs, how is it that you noticed Selden and Palver first? That is how you put it in your statement, is it not? Navas glanced around the courtroom wildly. He couldn't seem to escape the eyes, all the eyes screaming at him to tell the truth. Looking over at Harry Seldon, Riel Navas said simply, "I'm sorry." And to the amazement of the entire courtroom assemblage, the 14-year-old boy started to cry. Chapter 27. It was a lovely day, neither too warm nor too cold, not too bright nor too gray. Even though the groundskeeping budget had given out years ago, the few straggly perennials lining the steps leading up to the Galactic Library managed to add a cheerful note to the morning. The library, having been built in the classical style of antiquity, was fronted with one of the grandest stairways to be found in the entire empire, second only to the steps at the Imperial Palace itself. Most library visitors, however, preferred to enter via the glide rail. Seldon had high hopes for the day. Since he and Stetton Palver had been cleared of all charges in their recent assault and battery case, Harry Seldon felt like a new man. Although the experience had been painful, its very public nature had advanced Seldon's cause. Judge Tehan Pupjins Lee, who was considered one of, if not the most influential judge on Trentor, had been quite vociferous in her opinion, delivered the day following Riel Navis's emotional testimony. "When we come to such a crossroads in our civilized society," the judge intoned from her bench, "that a man of Professor Harry Seldon's standing is made to bear the humiliation, abuse, and lies of his peers simply because of who he is and what he stands for, it is truly a dark day for the Empire. I admit that I too was taken in at first. Why wouldn't Professor Seldon, I reasoned, resort to such trickery in an attempt to prove his predictions? But as I came to see, I was most grievously wrong." Here the judge's brow furrowed. A dark blue flush began creeping up her neck and into her cheeks. "For I was ascribing to Professor Seldon motives born of our new society, a society in which honesty, decency, and goodwill are likely to get one killed, a society in which it appears one must resort to dishonesty and trickery merely to survive. How far we have strayed from our founding principles. We were lucky this time, fellow citizens of Trentor. We owe a debt of thanks to Professor Harry Seldon for showing us our true selves. Let us take his example to heart and resolve to be vigilant against the baser forces of our human nature." Following the hearing, the Emperor had sent Seldon a congratulatory holodisc. On it, he expressed the hope that perhaps now Seldon would find renewed funding for his project. As Seldon slid up the entrance glide rail, he reflected on the current status of his psychohistory project. His good friend, the former chief librarian Las Zenov, had retired. During his tenure, Zenov had been a strong proponent of Seldon and his work. More often than not, however, Zenov's hands had been tied by the library board. But, he had assured Seldon, the affable new chief librarian, Trima Acarnio, was as progressive as he himself, and was popular with many factions among the board membership. "Harry, my friend," Zenov had said before leaving Trantor for his home world of Wenkuri, "Acarnio is a good man, a person of deep intellect and an open mind. I'm sure he'll do all that he can to help you and the project. I've left him the entire data file on you and your encyclopedia. I know he'll be as excited as I about the contribution to humanity it represents. Take care, my friend. I'll remember you fondly." And so today, Harry Seldon was to have his first official meeting with the new chief librarian. He was cheered by the reassurances Las Zenov had left with him, and he was looking forward to sharing his plans for the future of the project and the encyclopedia. Trima Acarnio stood as Harry entered the chief librarian's office. Already he had made his mark on the place. Whereas Zenov had stuffed every nook and cranny of the room with holodisks and tri-D journals from the different sectors of Trantor, and a dizzying array of visiglobes representing various worlds of the Empire had spun in mid-air, Acarnio had swept clear the mounds of data and images that Zenov had liked to keep at his fingertips. A large holoscreen now dominated one wall, on which, Selden presumed, Acarnio could view any publication or broadcast that he desired. Acarnio was short and stocky, with a slightly distracted look from a childhood corneal correction that had gone awry, that belied a fearsome intelligence and constant awareness of everything going on around him at all times. "Well, well, Professor Selden, come in, sit down." Acarnio gestured to a straight-backed chair facing the desk at which he sat. "It was, I felt, quite fortuitous that you requested this meeting. You see, I had intended to get in touch with you as soon as I settled in." Selden nodded, pleased that the new chief librarian had considered him enough of a priority to plan to seek him out in the hectic early days of his tenure. "But first, Professor, please let me know why you wanted to see me before we move on to my most likely more prosaic concerns." Selden cleared his throat and leaned forward. "Chief Librarian, Las Zenov has no doubt told you of my work here and of my idea for an Encyclopedia Galactica. Las was quite enthusiastic and a great help, providing a private office for me here and unlimited access to the library's vast resources. In fact, it was he who located the eventual home of the Encyclopedia Project, a remote outer world called Terminus. There was one thing, however, that Las could not provide. In order to keep the project on schedule, I must have office space and unlimited access granted to a number of my colleagues as well. It is an enormous undertaking, just gathering the information to be copied and transferred to Terminus before we can begin the actual work of compiling the encyclopedia. Les was not popular with the library board, as you undoubtedly are aware. You, however, are. And so I ask you, Chief Librarian, will you see to it that my colleagues are granted insider's privileges so that we may continue our most vital work?" Here Harry stopped, almost out of breath. He was sure that his speech, which he had gone over and over in his mind the night before, would have the desired effect. He waited, confident in Acarnio's response. "Professor Selden," Acarnio began. Selden's expectant smile faded. There was an edge to the chief librarian's voice that Selden had not expected. "My esteemed predecessor provided me, in exhaustive detail, an explication of your work here at the library. He was quite enthusiastic about your research and committed to the idea of your colleagues joining you here, as was I, Professor Selden." At Acarnio's pause, Selden looked up sharply. "At first, I was prepared to call a special meeting of the board to propose that a larger suite of offices be prepared for you and your encyclopedist. But, Professor Selden, all that has now changed."
"Changed? But why?"
"Professor Selden, you have just finished serving as principal defendant in a most sensational assault and battery case."
"But I was acquitted," Selden broke in. "The case never even made it to trial."
"Nonetheless, Professor, your latest foray into the public eye has given you an undeniable, how shall I say it, tinge of ill repute. Oh yes, you were acquitted of all charges. But in order to get to that acquittal, your name, your past, your beliefs, and your work were paraded before the eyes of all the worlds. And even if one progressive, right-thinking judge has proclaimed you faultless, what of the millions, perhaps billions, of other average citizens
who see not a pioneering psychohistorian striving to preserve his civilization's glory, but a raving lunatic shouting doom and gloom for the great and mighty empire. You, by the very nature of your work, are threatening the essential fabric of the empire. I don't mean the huge, nameless, faceless, monolithic empire. No, I am referring to the heart and soul of the empire, its people. When you tell them the empire is failing, you are saying that they are failing. And this, my dear professor, the average citizen cannot face. Selden, like it or not, you have become an object of derision, a subject of ridicule, a laughingstock. Pardon me, Chief Librarian, but for years now I have been to some circles a laughingstock. Yes, but only to some circles. But this latest incident, and the very public forum in which it was played out, has opened you up to ridicule, not only here on Trantor, but throughout the worlds. And, Professor, if by providing you an office, we, the Galactic Library, give tacit approval to your work, then, by inference, we, the Library, also become a laughingstock throughout the worlds. And no matter how strongly I may personally believe in your theory and your encyclopedia, as Chief Librarian of the Galactic Library on Trantor, I must think of the library first. And so, Professor Selden, your request to bring in your colleagues is denied. Harry Selden jerked back in his chair as if struck. Further, Acarnio continued, I must advise you of a 2-week temporary suspension of all library privileges, effective immediately. The board has called that special meeting, Professor Selden. In 2 weeks' time, we will notify you whether or not we've decided that our association with you must be terminated. Here, Acarnio stopped speaking, and placing his palms on the glossy, spotless surface of his desk, stood up. That is all, Professor Selden, for now. Harry Selden stood as well, although his upward movement was not as smooth nor as quick as Trima Acarnio's. May I be permitted to address the board? Asked Selden. Perhaps, if I were able to explain to them the vital importance of psychohistory and the encyclopedia. I'm afraid not, Professor, said Acarnio softly. And Selden caught a brief glimmer of the man Lass Zenov had told him about. But just as quickly, the icy bureaucrat was back, as Acarnio guided Selden to the door. As the portals slid open, Acarnio said, 2 weeks, Professor Selden. Till then. Harry stepped through to his waiting skitter, and the doors slid shut. What am I going to do now? Wondered Selden disconsolately. Is this the end of my work? Chapter 28. Wanda, dear, what is it that has you so engrossed? Asked Harry Selden as he entered his granddaughter's office at Streeling University. The room had been the office of the brilliant mathematician Hugo Amaril, whose death had impoverished the psychohistory project. Fortunately, Wanda had gradually taken over Hugo's role in recent years, further refining and adjusting the prime radiant. Why, I'm working on an equation in section 33A2D17. See, I've recalibrated this section. She gestured to a glowing violet patch suspended in midair in front of her face. Taking into consideration the standard quotient and... There, just what I thought. I think. She stepped back and rubbed her eyes. What is it, Wanda? Harry moved in closer to study the equation. Why, this looks like the terminus equation, and yet... Wanda, this is an inverse of the terminus equation, isn't it?
Yes, Grandpa.
See, the numbers weren't working quite right in the terminus equation. Look.
Wanda touched a contact in a recessed wall strip, and another patch sprang to life in vivid red on the other side of the room. Selden and Wanda walked over to inspect it.
You see how it's all hanging together fine now, Grandpa? It's taken me weeks to get it this way.
How did you do it? Asked Harry, admiring the equation's lines, its logic, its elegance.
At first, I concentrated on it from over here only. I blocked out all else. In order to get terminus to work, work on terminus, stands to reason, doesn't it? But then I realized that I couldn't just introduce this equation into the prime radian system and expect it to blend right in smoothly as if nothing happened. A placement means a displacement somewhere else. A weight needs a counterweight.
I think the concept to which you are referring is what the ancients called yin and yang.
Yes, more or less. Yin and yang. So you see, I realized that to perfect the yin of terminus, I had to locate its yang, which I did, over there.
She moved back to the violet patch, tucked away at the outer edge of the prime radiant sphere.
And once I adjusted the figures here, the terminus equation fell into place as well. Harmony.
Wanda looked pleased with herself, as if she'd solved all the problems of the Empire.
Fascinating, Wanda. And later on, you must tell me what you think it all means for the project. But right now, you must come with me to the holoscreen. I received an urgent message from Santani a few minutes ago. Your father wants us to call him immediately.
Wanda's smile faded. She had been alarmed at the recent reports of fighting on Santani. As Imperial budget cutbacks went into effect, the citizens of the outer world suffered most. They had limited access to the richer, more populous inner worlds, and it became more and more difficult to trade their world's products for much-needed imports. Imperial hyperships going in and out of Santani were few, and the distant world felt isolated from the rest of the Empire. Pockets of rebellion had erupted throughout the planet.
Grandfather, I hope everything's all right, said Wanda, her fear revealed by her voice.
Don't worry, dear. After all, they must be safe if Rach was able to send us a message.
In Selden's office, he and Wanda stood before the holoscreen as it activated. Selden punched a code on the keypad alongside the screen, and they waited a few seconds for the intragalactic connection to be established. Slowly, the screen seemed to stretch back into the wall, as if it were the entrance to a tunnel. And out of the tunnel, dimly at first, came the familiar figure of a stocky, powerfully built man. As the connection sharpened, the man's features became clearer. When Selden and Wanda were able to make out Rach's bushy, doll-like mustache, the figure sprang to life.
Dad, Wanda, said Rach's three-dimensional hologram, projected to Trantor from Santani. Listen, I don't have much time.
He flinched as if startled by a loud noise.
Things have gotten pretty bad here. The government has fallen, and a provisional party has taken over. Things are a mess, as you can imagine. I just put Manella and Velas on a hypership to Anacreon. I told them to get in touch with you from there. The name of the ship is the Arcadia 7. You should have seen Manella, Dad, mad as anything that she had to go. The only way I was able to convince her to leave was to point out that it was for Bellis's sake.
I know what you're thinking, Dad and Wanda. Of course I would have gone with them, if I could have. But there wasn't enough room. You should have seen what I had to go through just to get them onto the ship.
Rache flashed one of his lopsided grins that Selden and Wanda loved so much, then continued, "Besides, since I'm here, I have to help guard the university. We may be part of the Imperial University."